the MadTech podcast special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech. Hello and welcome to this special episode of the MadTech podcast brought to you by ExchangeWire. Our regular listeners don't get confused by the fact we're on a Wednesday. We have so much content we want to produce that we're now introducing Wednesday and Friday episodes. So our Wednesday episodes are normally our special episodes where we take, find a guest and we deep dive into a particular topic. This week we are looking at, it's a great time of year to be doing this, the top programmatic trends that we are expecting to see in the next 12 months. It's going to be a meaty discussion about lots of different things that we think are really going to trend next year. I'm delighted to welcome to join me to discuss this, Stefan Kerkic, who's head of programmatic from M6. Hello, Stefan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being a guest. And Harriet Cunningham, who is UK Sales Director at Scibids. Hello, Harriet.
Good morning, Lindsay. Thanks for having me too.
Lovely to have you both here. I'm looking forward to this discussion immensely. What we're going to do is we're going to kick off why I'm going to read out a list of topics to you. So topics that we think are going to be big in the next 12 months. And as a starting point, just as a headline to kind of really G up the audience, I want to get just a kind of really top line thought on each one. It can be a word, it can be a short sentence, but I just want to kind of get the kind of overarching, whether this is kind of all hype or going to be really, really kind of interesting thing to look into next year. So my first one is mobile, and specifically mobile first. So Stefan, I want to come to you for your brief thoughts on this one.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess as a one-liner, I've kind of gone with the need for speed is mobile the end game, given how much we're using it now going forward.
Very good. I'm liking the analogies there. Harriet, what about your thoughts on mobile first?
Oh, is this year really going to be the year? I think we've heard the year of mobile before, but will this year well and truly be the year? We'll wait and see.
Will it ever be the year? Who knows? Right, great. Thank you. Great starting point. Next, I'm going into cookieless. And Harriet, I'm coming to you first for cookieless.
It's just about time, isn't it? I feel like, we've been sort of speaking about it for a really long time. Some partners are already there. Parts of the industry are already there. And yeah, just the final few to go.
Stefan, your thoughts on cookieless?
I feel like I'm the kid in the back of the car. Are we there yet? As Harriet mentioned, it's been a while. Just keen to get to the destination, I guess.
That is a great way of putting it. I feel like mine for this would be change the narrative, because it feels like we've exhausted every possible narrative of cookieless now. Please, somebody bring me something different. But anyway, that's just my opinion. My next topic is carbon footprint. Stefan, coming back to you first for this one, please.
Simply put, making advertising planet friendly.
Love it. Brilliant. Nice and succinct. Harriet.
Mine sort of follows on from that. It's more like, you know, we need education and action to help us get there. And quickly.
Definitely agree with that. A big topic, so it's been big for a while, but doesn't really ever come to the surface. AI. Harriet.
Just an opportunity to fly. I think it's so sort of untapped and undiscovered by so many, but the next 2 years, it's going to be, you know, a hygiene factor for many advertisers out there.
Interesting. Stefan, AI.
The rise of the machines. Can we get some Terminators in advertising to help us be a little bit more efficient with the way that we're buying our media?
Now, there's a thought. That's something to think about. My next topic is new channels, emerging channels. So we're thinking here like the likes of out of home, likes of gaming, audio, CTV. Stefan, I'm going to come to you first on this one.
For me, I think it's just about a new perspective. You know, we were so focused on kind of the standard ways of working and the OG formats, but let's kind of expand our horizons a little bit.
Brilliant. Harriet?
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty game-changing for the way that our industry operates and roles and focuses. And yeah, I think it's going to be exciting.
Interesting. And my final one, the big one, is Web3, Metaverse, NFTs, all the all-encompassing terms that referring to everything outside of what we currently know as being normal. Harriet, what are your thoughts on this one?
It's fun and futuristic is how it feels at the moment.
And Stefan?
It's not just about digital ape JPEGs. There's a lot more to it and a lot more utility that I think we can obtain from Metaverse and NFTs and Web 3.0.
Brilliant. Thank you, guys. That was a really good start. Hopefully the audience are feeling pumped about the next conversation. So we looked into kind of the topics in as a top line perspective. Now we're going into them in detail. So the first one was mobile first, and looking at kind of what the opportunities are here for for clients, for advertisers, for agencies, what is lacking, what we can learn. Stefan, I want to come to you first and get your thoughts from an agency perspective as to kind of, you know, how you're working with mobile. Is it still the year of the mobile for many agencies or many of your clients? Are there meaningful things happening that kind of make you think this is a really interesting space to be looking at? Or should we be thinking mobile first for everything, given the demand and the usage of the devices?
Some great questions there. And I think from an agency perspective, we're starting to dabble in it a little bit more. Maybe we should already have been doing more in the past. But, you know, when I'm thinking about mobile, I'm thinking about new and innovative ways of targeting people. You know, Harry and I had a really interesting discussion earlier that, you know, I would say 90% of our time outside of sort of work, laptop and things like that, you're on your mobile now. It's become so advanced from, you know, a purchasing perspective, a tracking perspective as well. I remember years ago, it was like, oh no, we don't want to target mobile because we can't track conversions properly. But now you've got so many partners that allow you to track those conversions. It's so seamless. It's so much easier to do those, to make those purchases that you would normally have done on a laptop or a desktop. And when it comes to actually advertising on that sort of platform, again, we don't just want to do sort of the standard sort of sizes, IAB sort of formats. We want to look at new and innovative ways of doing that. So how do we bring into play things like augmented reality, for example, or shoppable formats, or, you know, even, and again, from a programmatic perspective, stealing something from social, for example, and having social-based formats in our sort of programmatic advertising formats where people can kind of scroll through and sort of see what they're doing here. So I think given the fact that most of us are now predominantly mobile-focused, it does make a lot more sense for us to start pushing more of these formats and getting advertisers on board to start thinking about how they can start to use mobile throughout the full funnel of marketing. It's not just kind of the brand awareness now, but from consideration to conversion as well.
And do you find that given your role is has a global element to it, do you find that in certain regions where there is a kind of more mobile first approach, that your strategy changes and the clients you work with are understanding of how consumption of mobile differs from market to market?
I would say, and again, maybe this is very generic, but I would say a lot of markets now, consumers as a whole, mobile first. And I would say even in a lot of developing countries as well, mobile is the only way that people can communicate and do things, right? Laptops, desktops are more of a luxury. But, you know, going back to, you know, the wider world as a whole, right? I think that, you know, mobile just has that capability to reach more people now. And that's what we've actually started to see, that shift. I remember a few years ago, it was like ads were, there was the split was maybe like 70-30 or 80-20 at some point. And then it started to move a little bit closer to 50-50. And I reckon now it's probably almost reverse now, where we're seeing a lot of our ads on mobile, you know, maybe 60-40 now in favor of mobile. So I think from a global lens, yes, mobile is definitely sort of the way to go moving forward.
Interesting. And Harriet, I want to come to you next. And I want to understand from your perspective, kind of what are the considerations for mobile targeting and mobile measurement and tracking? And what are the things we need to take into account when we're planning a mobile campaign?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I think, you know, Steph has sort of, yeah, alluded to the fact that we're all spending much more time on our mobiles. But, you know, even 5 years ago, we were too. But, you know, you would get creatives from, you know, oh, here's a TV advert. Can you turn that into a display format that I can put onto mobile? But actually, the times are really shifting right from the start of, you know, a campaign's journey. You know, when it comes to the people that are activating and actioning, you know, mobile does have a lot sort of less signals compared to what we used to be able to get on a, you know, standard sort of desktop display campaigns. And, you know, that there are certain companies out there that have done really well with that. And I expect, you know, with cookieless sort of disappearing, those mobile companies will be able to transition those technologies to a sort of a display environment. But, you know, the signals that do exist are kind of really good to use. You know, here at Cybids, we, you You know, we build custom algorithms in a sentence. I mean, no one's here to hear my sales pitch, so I'll keep it short and sweet and go into a bit more detail later. But, you know, we've recently, run a big campaign with a fast food brand in the US, and, we saw a 30% increase on the downloads that they were able to deliver just by connecting their sort of SDK data to the DSP data. You know, there is a lot less data there. You know, the signals are less obvious, so it is harder. But, you know, I think, yeah, with cookie-less going, I think companies are going to naturally find that the changes that they make for their businesses to sort of manage and kind of handle that to still deliver performance for their clients will, you know, naturally do well in the mobile market space too.
And has mobile advertising, because of obviously the challenges of cookies, challenges, you know, on Apple, we've got ATT and utilizing SK Ad Network, and obviously Google are talking about removing GUID as well. Do we think that mobile advertising has become much harder and will continue to become much more difficult? And how do we mitigate that, I guess? Stefan, what are your thoughts on that?
Again, some really good points there, especially when it comes to the tracking issues. Yes, it will become a little bit more tricky to do. But I think, you know, when we are faced with those kind of outlooks, I feel that we do find that people start to innovate a little bit more. And again, we'll probably touch on this on Cookieless, but when we are faced with those things, there are partners that come up with new solutions, new tech opportunities for tracking. So yes, I think in the short term, there will be some difficulty, especially when you're looking at running conversion-based activity. But I think from a brand heat, brand awareness perspective, mobile should still be considered as an incredibly viable option where you just think about the mass reach that you can get from running on mobile.
Mm. And Harriet, are there things that the more legacy brands can learn from mobile first advertisers? You know, there are certain advertisers, especially in the gaming realms, for example, that have grown up on mobile only, and so they've kind of been able to weather the storm, not necessarily more easily, but they've been able to prepare for it probably in a better way, in a more focused way than maybe other bigger brands have been able to do that. Do you think there are things we can learn from them?
I think, yes, there will definitely be things that they will be able to learn, but I think there's going to be a lot of collaboration that we're going to see from this. You know, much like we do with any big challenges that sort of come our way in the market, it's when ad tech firms and agencies and brands sort of work together to really understand, okay, what data have we got? What can we utilize? What challenges have we got in front of us? And how can we sort of innovate together to help us win? I think, you know, what would have worked 5 years ago for mobile, you know, isn't necessarily going to work for the next 5 years. So I think, yeah, I'm not sure if there's a sort of secret sauce, and I'm sure if there is, someone's going to be reaching out to come on the podcast next time. But yeah, I think it's all going to be around sort of collaboration and innovation to test and trial what works in a, you know, in a market that may well feel relatively unfamiliar to many.
Yeah, I think very sadly, there is no secret sauce. It's all about test and learn, test and learn, test and learn. But on that note, I'm going to move us on to our next topic, which is, as Stefan's already alluded to, is cookieless. So, Stefan, again, I'm going to come to you first and get your perspective on cookieless advertising and what it means and what it'll mean in 2023.
Again, another good question. I think it means that, you know, and I think what we've been doing for the last couple of years is really trying to find new ways of targeting people without third-party cookies. And I think that has, again, made us a little bit more innovative in the way that we've done that. We've gone back to kind of old school methods of contextual targeting, and we've actually seen improvements in the tech behind contextual, which is obviously fantastic. The delays, I think, have been somewhat beneficial to us, because it's actually given advertisers, agencies, a lot more time to refine their testing and learning strategy. It's given the partners a lot more time to refine their technology as well. But, you know, on the whole, I think, you know, it just means that we now have a lot more options when it comes to targeting. And again, we'll probably cover this a little bit later, but, you know, alongside contextual, you've also got, you know, the identity space, you've got the AI space as well, which we're currently trying to test. But yeah, I can go into that in a little bit more detail later on.
And how do you think that cookieless has impacted the ready? I mean, you just mentioned that the delay has given you more time, which obviously was definitely needed. Everyone felt very rushed, but there are also many, many people that are followers, not leaders, and think, well, I will do something when this person does something. And actually, I've just built this brand new piece of technology that is built around third-party cookies. I'm talking about kind of brands and advertisers here. Are there still people out there that are going to wait to the last possible moment and then panic when literally D-Day reckons and they have not prepared themselves for a cookieless future? Is that still happening, or is this actually meaning the writing on the wall now, everyone is definitely getting prepared?
I think it's hard to say, but I also think that there will be some that will be last minute. But I think for the majority of us within the industry, it's been such a hot topic for the last 2 years. Everybody's been working on something, papers, agendas, theories, hypotheses, and things like that. So I think most of us in the industry are in a somewhat good place. And I think it's just for us to educate, you know, our clients, advertisers, that we should start to be doing this more and more, right? If you haven't already started doing that. And again, there's loads of options, you know, depending on what partners you want to use, what technology platforms. So yeah, we do have options, but it's just making sure that you at least do, you know, just a couple of tests here and there, just to see, you know, is there reach, is there scale on these alternative methods? And I know a lot of people are still very much set in their ways and used to third-party cookies. I think we all are to a certain extent when it comes to retargeting and things like that. But, you know, now is the time to definitely start branching out and seeing what you can do to be ready for the end of next year or the beginning of 2024.
Absolutely. And Harriet, your perspective on cookieless was about time too. So kind of dig into that for me. Kind of what do you think that it looks like?
So I think there's definitely been an element that we've all felt it. It's been over our industry news. It's what clients are asking about. It's what agencies are asking about. So it's always like there's been a bit of like fear mongering to get people moving and sort of get people to kind of react quickly. And, you know, as Steph mentioned, like, you know, we're seeing companies innovate at real scale. So there are lots of options to sort of test out in market. But, you know, there are browsers that have been cookieless for a long time. You know, mobile hasn't always had the most perfect tracking, and, you know, particularly in a sort of post GDPR world, although I know we're replacing that with a new bill, but, you know, to still cover the sort of data adequacy, there's, you know, we're going to still be aligning to pretty much the very similar type of regulations. But anyway, you know, from mobile and some of those browsers, like, we can see that it's really, you know, it is manageable and it is possible to still survive and to still run really great campaigns. And I think, you know, there's going to be an element of, you know, the good old days, you know, for marketers, not necessarily for consumers, are somewhat behind us. And, you know, from a targeting perspective, you know, many are sort of well on the road to using contextual metadata. I think the real questions are going to come around measurement. I think that's going to be the thing that people are really going to want to be testing and trialing. And, you know, like Stefan said, like, the best way to tackle it is going to be sort of A/B tests versus your current setup and measurement practices versus a sort of a non-cookieless way, and to really sort of be able to isolate the impact. But I think, you know, it's going to feel like a sort of natural step by the time it does finally arrive. Like, you know, we've been given a lot of breathing space. You know, it'll be, what, 4 years, 3 years by the time we get to it. You know, it's going to rattle and have a little bit of uncertainty. But from the tests and sort of tech products I've seen out there, you know, the industry is well on the way to having solutions at hand for when that D-Day finally does come around.
And on the topic of measurement, which you talked about there for a bit, Harriet, in terms of, you know, what does a cookieless future fundamentally change how you measure? Yes. Does it change your KPIs? Like, you know, you both talked about contextual there. From a contextual perspective, you know, is the attention economy the new metric that everyone's looking at? Is attention the new viewability that will become almost hygiene factor in any kind of campaign that you're running? Stefan, what are your perspective on this?
Love the word. It's the big one for this year and for next year. And we've definitely started to focus on that a lot more this year. And just for some context, and a really, really interesting bunch of insights that I heard this year was a standard MPU has about an attention time of about half a second. And then if you consider some more attention-based formats that are actually optimizing towards that, you can get anywhere from 2 to 3 to even 4 seconds of attention time, which is absolutely astronomical in comparison. Wow. And also I had another study as well that said for every second of attention time, you get 3 days of ad memory. So you can start to see now that that's why we want to start shifting more towards attention, because there's no point having great ads if people are just flicking through and not seeing them. And they're only in view for half a second, which is not enough time for anyone's eyeball to really appreciate an ad or retain it in memory. So if we start going for 2 seconds and above, that could probably do a world of wonders for ads in general, for brand awareness, brand heat. And you can just imagine the difference in brand uplift studies as well when we are starting to optimize more towards attention. So yeah, it could be very well be the new viewability.
That's very interesting. I think there's obviously a lot of chat around attention. And Harriet, from your perspective, kind of from the machine learning perspective, the AI perspective, kind of what drivers can there be in actually making the contextual agenda kind of front and center and driving KPIs like attention going forwards?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I've always been on the sort of activation side of the marketing world. So my mind always goes to, yeah, attention sounds brilliant. Like it sounds, you know, like Steph said, it's like we want to be in front of people's eyeballs for longer so that we can have an impact. And having the data is one thing, but I think one thing, you know, that's really exciting me is like, you know, what can we actually do about it? So, you know, but two ways. From a creative standpoint, can we be sharing those insights back with the brand as to, okay, what is it about your creative that could be driving the additional attention compared to the ads we created 2 months ago? More kind of closely related to my part of the industry that I'm largely exposed to is, you know, we're actually going to be able to optimize towards this. You know, we'll be able to understand the data, recognize, you know, which impressions, singular impressions, are driving attention, and how can we use that as our seed data, as our sort of optimization power? You know, can we stitch together these two sets of data and be able to kind of optimize towards that? You know, we've got some great partnerships with a couple of the ad servers, kind of global ad servers, where we're starting to offer clients the ability to not just measure attention, be able to actively optimize towards it. And, you know, I wouldn't be too surprised if in the next 12 months, 18 months, that becomes sort of standard for lots of clients where, yes, I've got a CPA goal, but I want that conversion to have attention to it as well.
Thank you, Harriet. That was very, very interesting. And so our next topic is carbon footprint. I mean, this is huge, right? This is, everyone is talking about this, or everyone's wanting to be involved in the conversation. Stefan, from your perspective on the agency side, what conversations are happening around carbon footprint? Where is it important to you as head of programmatic?
We've recently started to have some early discussions around this with certain partners about how we can start to go on our journey to sort of be net zero and offsetting our carbon. We're still kind of in the early days. We're still trying to figure out sort of the best approach here going forward. But, you know, I think this is crucial going forward. And I think that, you know, even not just from an advertising perspective, shouldn't be thinking about reducing our carbon emissions, but even, you know, us, you know, working for, you know, whatever sort of companies that we're working with, it's doing the small things that I think can really impact the environment and help us. And I think I read a really interesting stat once that, you know, just not sending an email when you don't have to could do a world of wonders from an energy saving perspective. So, you know, you don't need to send a reply to something, don't do it. You know, that all adds to the carbon emissions, right? And, you know, just another interesting stat when it comes to advertising and the carbon footprint. But apparently 1 million impressions served equals about 1 metric ton of CO2, or the equivalent of about 200,000 plastic bags. And we run a lot of impressions on a monthly, daily basis, right? So you can see that there is a big need to try and kind of solve this problem here.
I mean, obviously, our listeners will recognise what that means, but 1 million impressions to the layman who would believe that digital is not particularly carbon intensive, they would think 1 million impressions would be accrued in probably a couple of days. But obviously, we know better. 1 million impressions is accrued by, you know, one agency in a matter of milliseconds, probably. So that is a terrifying statistic. Thank you for sharing that. That's scared me somewhat. And also, I think it's challenging to, it's still challenging to quantify, you know, what does one metric ton of CO2 mean? And there's an equivalent measurement for everything. In this case, 200,000 plastic bags, which is a very scarily quantifiable number. What do you think the things that we need to think about are in terms of what this stat actually means? Like from a brand listening to this, how do they then go, okay, well then what do I need to do in an ad campaign to ensure that I am reducing my contribution to 200,000 plastic bags equivalent?
I think there are a number of ways that they can go about that. And, you know, just to point out a few more things on where does some of these emissions come from. So there's actually a few places. So the ad creation process. So how can you be a little bit more efficient creating your ads, making sure they're smaller in file, they load faster, all the kind of the brilliant basics. You've also got the media production side of things as well. So how can the publishers and the content creators be more efficient with their creation as well? Because obviously we need to put our ads around that sort of content. The ad targeting and the media consumed. And again, I think that's something that us as agencies need to work on as well. And I think there are a couple of other initiatives that can help with that, whether, you know, we're talking about supply path optimization and things like that, to really clean up the inventory and make sure that we are reaching the most using the most efficient path to getting those ads onto the web. And then I think there's other elements that advertisers can work on as well, especially if they have lots of products that they're selling. You know, on their end, how can they be a lot more efficient with creating those products, shipping those products and things like that? So it's kind of, I think everyone has to come together and work quite cohesively, sort of one team, one dream, as they say.
And are there partners that you're now working with that are helping you on this journey to achieve this for you, for yourselves as a company, but also for the clients you work with as well?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, early talks at the moment with partners such as We Are 8, who are sort of a new sort of social platform. And I think one of the stats was that for, I think, 5% of the media spend can potentially go to a charity or a cause, for example, like helping to plant more trees, which again helps us offset our carbon. And then also working with partners such as Scope3 as well, which kind of identify the best ways possible of us getting our ads out there through the supply chain. So yeah, as I mentioned, early discussions, and I think a lot more partners will start to pop up in this space as well going forward.
And you mentioned some efficiencies there in terms of ad creation, in terms of even simple things like not replying to an email. What are the working with different partners? What are the things that can be done to make the supply chain more efficient? Is that a route to helping reduce carbon emissions in the long term?
Of course. I mean, that when you think about the existing way that the supply path kind of worked, you know, all DSPs were connected to all SSPs, and it was just a crisscross mismatch, just so many things happening, duplications, you know, serving ads, you know, across the same site via 5 different SSPs, for example. And I think the SPO initiative over the last couple of years has really helped narrow our paths, basically. So for example, if you were running on 20, 30 exchanges, you're now potentially running on 7 or 10 exchanges, right? And, you know, you're able to work more closely with those partners, perhaps get better deals, lower rates. You have a bit more transparency on the costs as well and things like that. And you know exactly where your ads are kind of going and what route that they're kind of taking. So I think that's definitely been a big boost in that department.
Absolutely. And Harriet, we ExchangeWire ran a report with Cybids not long ago, asking the industry lots of different questions, one of which is around carbon emissions. And reducing carbon emissions was the most important trend for brands and publishers, according to the report. But they were far less certain about how to achieve this. So what, from your perspective, do you think are the things that advertisers need to and want to understand about carbon footprint? And how do they understand, how do they kind of make these changes? Kind of what support can companies like yourselves actually offer them?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I think sort of, obviously Steph mentioned a few there that are, you know, around the sort of ad creation and the media production. But I think when it really comes to sort of actually running your sort of campaigns, you know, action needs to be sort of taken. And, you know, for us, Scope 3 are, you know, a fantastic addition to our industry, providing the data around the carbon emissions produced on your sort of impressions. You know, we've been working with them for a little while now, and, you know, we're now at a stage where we can actively optimize towards conversions that have a lower carbon footprint and sort of pull ourselves away from those that have a higher carbon footprint. You know, I think one of the big things about climate change, and, you know, you only have to open a news app to get this. I know it's not, you know, nothing original, but, you know, you need to take action to reduce that. You know, there is definitely a time and a place for sort of offsetting, but if you can reduce the power of that is sort of massive. So yeah, that's certainly one place where we're starting to really help clients sort of actively reduce. You know, the question that comes with it, of course, though, is that you know, there may well be a cost associated to that. You know, how prepared are you to lose 20, 30 conversions a month because the places that you're getting those are, you know, areas of the internet that do carry a sort of a you know, really high carbon footprint. And I think that's going to be the real challenge over the next year, is clients testing and really understanding, you know, for every conversion, what is our average carbon footprint, and is there a way to reduce it, and are we prepared to sort of see a reduction there, a kind of a loss in performance? With the recession, you know, well and truly sort of, you know, on its way, that's going to be a really difficult question for brands to answer. And I think, you know, an area and a place for the industry will definitely see a lot of education and innovation over the next year or so.
I mean, that's a fascinating point, isn't it? I haven't really thought about it. The fact that, you know, how far are you willing to go to reduce your carbon footprint? Does it mean that, you know, are you willing to reduce performance, actually take less revenue, take less money as a brand, as an advertiser? There are many brands that might not really want to do that, and actually it also kind of highlights the need for the advertisers themselves to be really, really working cohesively as a different team. So the finance teams with the sustainability teams with the marketing teams and everybody else in between needs to really have that conversation to all align on their goals, and that will be very, very important. I mean, Stefan, from your perspective of the agency side of things, where you, I know that over the past few years that the nature of which how agencies work with brands has changed hugely, and in terms of trying to embed yourselves within different departments to ensure that you're part of that cohesive collaboration as well. Is that something that you think is going to be very, very important, ensuring that your clients are working internally as one to help you do your job better as well?
Yeah, completely agree with that. And I think it's something that Harriet mentioned as well earlier. It's all around education. And I think it's our job as agencies to really make sure that we bring everyone together, we do the knowledge sharing, and we get everyone on the same page, really, so that we can start to move on this journey together and be as close to net zero as possible, I guess.
Absolutely. I'm going to move us on to the next topic. And another big one, we talked about it earlier as being, you know, it's been kind of a sleeping giant for a while, but feels like it could go mainstream in 2023. It is artificial intelligence. Harriet, bring it home. Talk to me about AI.
So look, I think, you know, AI has been around for a long time. You know, it's a word that everyone sort of feels familiar with. There's lots of different types of artificial intelligence, but, you know, machine learning is one of the biggest that's used within our, you know, within our industry. It's been doing incredible things in other industries, but, you know, our industry is perfectly suited for it. You know, we have loads and loads of data. We've got loads of sort of inventory that's able to buy. Like, the opportunities are sort of endless, but without really understanding what's driving your brand sort of performance, you know, you're not going to see the results that you need. But there's so much like analysis that is required from a human if you're going to be doing that. So, you know, programmatic is really sort of well kind of suited to AI, that we can sort of push beyond the powers of sort of human automation. You know, here at Scibids, we use AI to create impression level optimization power through custom algorithms. can run across any addressable paid media campaign towards any KPI, you know, DSP, custom or third party. You know, it's, we're not new, we've been around for 6 years, but it does feel like we're really on the sort of brink of something massive. You know, very recently we've had a huge brand, a global brand in the US that put out an RFI for an AI-driven custom algorithm. And it was the first one of its kind that we'd seen. And I think it was just a real clear sign of intention for us that actually this is certainly something that is on people's radars. And, you know, much of what they were saying is, you know, we expect this to be something that we are utilising across all of our campaigns in sort of years to come. If we can build efficiencies, you know, by driving better results, by reducing our media costs, because we're able to find those kind of little niche areas where we can, you know, get something for 2p cheaper or whatever that might be. So yeah, huge opportunities. But, you know, I think there's obviously the other side of that, which is, you know, growth can and, you know, may well be slowing over the next 12 months, whereas we see like a reduction in sort of borrowing and spending, and, you know, base rates are up. You know, businesses, you know, they're going to desire to be smarter with the marketing budgets that they've got left. And I think, you know, we're going to see a desire to really focus on, okay, what's working? How can I get more from it? And I think that's where, yeah, the sort of power of AI and custom algorithms, where they have something that's completely bespoke for them, is going to really, really see an uptick.
So it sounds like now more than ever is a time to really embrace AI and machine learning. And so, Stefan, from your perspective, kind of, I'm interested in what your experiences have been with AI, because obviously AI, I think a lot of people still think of it as the robotics part of machine learning, the robotics part of AI. Actually, they think of it as being something really cool and can be really exciting, things can happen. But actually, there's so much that machine learning can do that kind of in the background to really improve and enhance a programmatic campaign. How are you guys using AI, machine learning, and kind of what have your experiences been with it so far?
Well, look, I'm a massive fan, and you know, we've seen some fantastic results from Scibids over the last sort of 10 months or so with specific campaigns. Just to name one really good example, I think we saw about 250% increase in conversions and a CPA reduction of close to about 70%, which is absolutely phenomenal.
Wow.
And now, exactly right. Now, I know a lot of people are like, oh, but you know, there's a cost involved with it. It might be a little bit expensive. It eats into your media spend, right? But if you're generating 2, 3, 4 times more than what you're kind of paying for it, then surely that sort of justifies the cost. And you know, at the end of the day, anything that helps us and makes our life a little bit easier, again, I'm a big fan of, because if we don't have to spend time pulling reports, faffing about with the pivot tables, trying to understand what we need to take out or add in, and we just let the AI kind of do that for us, then that's a huge win, because it just means that people save time and they can focus on doing other things, because they know that in the back of their mind that they don't have to worry about anything because the AI's kind of got it all. And it's not to say that we leave it alone completely. You know, it's still a semi-supervised sort of aspect of machine learning, where you do need to kind of tweak it here and there. And, you know, every now and again, you know, there was a really great example where I was pulling reports beginning of the year for a specific campaign, and we realized that, okay, we're running, you know, 24 hours a day, but between midnight and about 5 a.m., our CPAs were not that great, right? So that was where we just kind of reached out to Harry and said, hey, look, can you guys make this tweak on your end and just make sure that it's kind of turned off in that period, so with the aim of seeing improved efficiencies sort of with our CPA and our sort of ROAS goals there. So I think we're in a really nice place at the moment where AI is helping us a lot, but then we're also able to kind of fuel it and help it get even better as things progress.
And what conversations need to be had with in your business internally, and also then with your clients and partners as well, to kind of really embrace the opportunity that the AI can bring to digital advertising? Was it a difficult sell-in for M6 to get involved with actually looking into what AI can bring? And again, was it a difficult sell-in for your clients, or were they like, yeah, no, actually, if it's going to bring more conversions, go ahead?
Yeah, basically exactly what you just said there. If it can do the business, let's work with it kind of thing. So yeah, we've seen some really good uptake in sort of using AI. Obviously, all the case studies that we have, obviously, you know, internally or from Harrier, really help us kind of drive home the message that, look, if you start to use this, these are kind of some of the possibilities that you'll see when it comes to increasing your conversion or reducing your CPA. And, you know, if people are still a little bit hesitant, then that's what A/B tests are for, right? You know, we did a whole bunch of that kind of stuff last year, where we kind of tested Scibids against the Google's kind of algorithm and just kind of the standard BAU stuff. And I think Scibids just completely blew everyone out of the water, and we just kind of carried on using that going forward. So yeah, if anyone's a little bit dubious about AI and the cost and does it actually work, then just do a bunch of tests and just make sure that you've got, I guess, enough data in the back end to sort of feed the AI. I guess that would be one caveat.
Absolutely. Brilliant. And Harriet, for our listeners, what are, obviously, there's the confusion around, is AI machine learning? Is machine learning AI? You're the expert here. What are the major branches of AI that listeners at home should be aware of, so they know when they're talking about AI, they're talking about the right section? Because yeah, I get so it wrong, like, all the time.
So AI is like the title. Let's run a bit like that. So AI is the title, and then underneath that you have the six different types. So machine learning, expert systems, robotics, neural networks, fuzzy logic, natural language processing. Much of what your experience within programmatic and our world is around machine learning, and that's where we take data, we analyze it. You know, in our case, we use that for our custom algorithms. And then the next day, we add even more data to the previous day's data, and we re-go through that process. So it is the machine that is learning sort of from the data. So yeah, that's that side of thing. And it's the machine learning that then kind of creates our sort of custom algorithms. But actually, in another way that we use machine learning at Scibids, and one that, you know, helps me sleep at night before those A/B tests that Steph mentioned, is that, you know, we've got something called a fit score, which is basically where our tech will analyze and look at your campaign setup and give us an indication to what extent the AI will be able to have a positive impact on that KPI, you know, be that to reduce the media cost or increase the sort of DSP KPI across like performance or brand or video or even YouTube. So yeah, I think we use that sort of AI and sort of machine learning process through sort of two different avenues, one for activation, but one for sort of pre-campaign, where we can, yeah, I can sleep well at night, but also clients have the confidence that they're not investing money into something that, that ultimately hasn't got the best room to succeed.
Brilliant. And on that note, I'm going to move us to our next topic, which is newer channels, broadly speaking. So like I mentioned earlier, we're thinking things like gaming, audio, out of home. Some of these are not new channels, obviously, admittedly. Some of these are the oldest channels in the world. Out of home claims to be the first ever media channel. But of course, in terms of digitalization, these are very new channels and very interesting channels. And I want to get your perspectives on kind of what they are, how they're working, and what the opportunities are here. So Steph, I'm going to come to you first.
Sure. So I think from a digital out-of-home perspective, I think there's a lot that we can do here, especially as a lot more demand-side platforms have started to integrate with a lot more sort of spaces where we can actually start to serve these ads. And really interesting, actually, I was in Mexico a few weeks ago, walking around Mexico City, and I actually saw a digital out-of-home, and it had a very quick advert on it in Spanish saying, you know, put your ads here programmatically. I thought, wow, that's amazing. I'm 10,000 miles away from home. In another country, and I'm already seeing the potential and the opportunities for people to start buying their out of home programmatically. And I think the best thing about this is that, you know, it is ad blocker resistant as well. It's there, it's in your face, it's kind of linking to the attention piece that we were speaking about earlier, where it's invisible for, you know, definitely a couple of seconds as people are walking by or driving by, or whatever it is. And then I think when it comes to gaming as well, I think there's been a massive push in that going forward, with loads of partners popping up with great inventory. albeit, you know, it is mobile first at the moment. Again, not a bad thing. But, you know, we are looking for some of the more larger AAA consoles to sort of to come into play here, where we can start to do advertising there and reach just a whole bunch of new people that maybe we're not reaching at the moment. And I think with audio as well, yes, audio has been around for ages. But, you know, with the rise of people listening to Spotify, listening to podcasts, and various other partners, I think there's a real opportunity to just, you know, get audio in that kind of full funnel mix there. And then also with those sort of brand up the studies as well, kind of added on top of that, I think that can add a lot of value to sort of your specific campaigns. And then CTV, the big one, obviously now with Disney Plus and Netflix adding in their sort of ad supported tiers, I think that's going to be absolutely sort of pivotal in the way that we shift towards advertising on TV now going forward. You know, the CPM is a little bit high. I think I saw some quotes about £65 plus and a minimum investment about £500,000. So I think we'll let some of the big boys jump in and play first, and then just kind of see how that all works out and where we can start to sort of jump in and see if it can become a little bit more mainstream as measurement gets a little bit better, targeting gets a little bit better. So yeah, a lot of exciting things to look forward to in the next sort of 12 to 24 months, I reckon.
And what for you is the, I'm not asking you to pick favourites, and what for you is the most exciting of all those emerging channels that you really kind of think is the thing that is going to bring you the most enjoyment when it comes to working with them, talking to them about with your clients?
I think for me personally, digital out of home, and only because I've been speaking about it for 2 years now. And, you know, back then, you know, maybe even longer when it was the big thing in the US. And, you know, we didn't really have much of it in Europe. But now, you know, everything's evolved, everything's changed. So I am really trying to push a little bit more of that within the agency.
Love it. Definitely worthwhile. Digital Out of Home doesn't get enough exposure, in my opinion.
Yeah, not enough love.
Definitely not. Harriet, from your perspective, what are your thoughts around these emerging channels and where we can take them next year?
Yeah, I think there's so much opportunity out there where, you know, like you said, these sort of some of these more traditional channels are transitioning into digital or have already sort of transitioned to have a digital element to them as well. I sort of agree with Steph. Like, I think digital out of home is maybe one of the most sort of exciting ones. Like, I think it's the one that always is... It's always the one that impresses me the most. It's like when I'm out and about and I see something, I'm like, oh, that's so clever that it's relating to the weather or what's been happening on the news. Like the ability for it to be so dynamic, I think is as a consumer, something that kind of really catches my eye. I think with my work hat on, I think sort of CTV is going to be really, really interesting. I think, you know, it's certainly the one where I expect there's going to be lots of sort of third party programmatic services providers are going to be excited about. You know, they'll have seen certain type of budgets reduce as agencies have built very sort of competent internal capabilities. So I think it's going to be a big new space that they can dive right into. They can innovate a product that they can have ready for agencies and brands to dip into. But, you know, ultimately the DSPs will be providing an element to everyone. And I think there's going to be some really hot discussions next year around sort of measurement, you know, omni-channel optimization, you know, now that we ultimately might have the capability to buy everything all from one platform. You know, how do we have a better sort of real-time omni-channel measurement system in place? But I imagine we'll be talking about that more in 2028 rather than 2023.
2028, yeah, it feels realistic. And honestly, yeah. I did not expect you both to choose Digital Out of Home as your favourites there. But I do have to agree that as a consumer, it's probably the one I'm most engaged with and most excited by. And yeah, it gets me when I see a good out-of-home ad. But anyway, on to our final topic of the day, which is the big one. It's everything around Web3, Metaverse, and everything that encompasses. So I really want to understand from an advertising perspective what that actually means. So Stefan, you know, what does that mean for your brand and the clients you're working with? Are they asking about Web3? Are they wanting to understand how they can utilise it? Or is it a bit too ethereal at the moment?
Yeah, I think it is a little bit far out for the majority of people and advertisers as a whole. I know some brands have kind of dived in a little bit and started experimenting. There are some really great examples of how, you know, you can really help drive brand heat and brand awareness by, you know, using the power of NFTs, metaverse, Web 3.0 and things like that. And just some really great examples. A few months ago, Gap started this collection of kind of hoodies, NFTs that you could collect. And if you collected a certain amount, it would make you eligible to actually purchase a real life hoodie. So it's kind of, I like that kind of nice blend of digital and real world as well. And then when you start to think about the metaverse as well, things like, you know, Roblox or Sandbox, or Decentraland, and how you can, you know, big brands are buying plots of land, virtual land, and they're building their own stores in there that people can visit and shop in and things like that. And I think there was an even example of Walmart kind of jumping on that as well, where you could literally go into a metaverse version of Walmart and start looking at things and buying things. So yeah, I definitely think from a awareness and heat perspective, and even potentially consideration, there's a lot to do there. And again, just to remind people, NFTs and things like that, as I mentioned, it's not just about pictures. There's a whole bunch of other utility and ownership that you can get from that. It could be the deed to a house, for example, or it could be a specific contract between two people. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to clear that up as well. And you know, Web 3.0 is about people owning their data and having their own building blocks. If you go back to the early days of the internet, Web 1.0, it was literally just text on a page. And just reading. And then Web 2.0 was the rise of Meta, you know, Facebook, Instagram, and all these kind of play, MySpace, High Five. And if you remember that, probably showing my age here, where, you know, they were taking your data and, you know, to an extent, you know, we're still kind of in that phase at the moment. So yeah, I definitely think there's a whole bunch of opportunity that can be done here. The only problem is a little bit expensive, but I think it could be potentially worth the investment if you are looking to just get your brand out there. It could be on news sites. You know, it was all over the news, tech websites as well. Oh, Gap's doing this new thing. I think that was good for them because they went through a phase where they were shutting down all their stores in the UK, for example. So you can see that, you know, there could be some benefits to kind of dabbling a little bit. But I think it's probably a little bit early for a lot of advertisers.
Interesting. I don't remember High Five. It's not something I've ever come across. So maybe you are much, much older than me, which I doubt. But yeah, not one I ever, it was ever on my radar. But it's fascinating that you actually, it's very important the what you, your definitions around kind of what NFTs can be used for, the value of Web3 outside of it being around metaverse, but actually it's the data privacy aspect and the data control aspect that Web1 and 2 just haven't got in the same way. And that's probably the exciting thing and maybe something that brands will be particularly conscious of as the focus on the consumer is kind of ever more prevalent. And it's certainly been a big talk the past couple of years. You know, we went for years without the consumer ever really being talked about in a programmatic event. And that's terrifying that, you know, all this effort being put to put an ad in front of a consumer, and yet it was the consumer that we forgot about. That's changing. Web3 will change that even more. Stefan, kind of some of the things you alluded to there about the importance of what that will do is a really interesting point and one not to be forgotten beyond all the fun and interesting aspects of what the metaverse can actually deliver. And I'm interested in your perspectives, Harriet, on what the opportunities are here. I mean, you'd feel like it would have a nice tie-in with potential opportunities in AI, but then again, are people just looking at these big ethereal topics and going, they're the same thing, I don't understand it, so I'm going to assume it's all identical. What kind of what's happening from your perspective in this area?
Yeah, I think you're right. There is definitely an element with sort of you know, Web3, NFTs, metaverse, where you know advertisers, agencies are like, right, how does this fit into our next 12 month plan? And I think that is very sort of, I know from the conversations I've had, feels a bit off. It, you know, definitely feels like we need a bit more education and a bit more sort of like deep understanding into what those benefits are. And I think, you know, as cookies depreciate and it does become something that really is, okay, well, they've gone now, but like, what was the reason? And people start to really engage and understand. I think we'll see that kind of pick up, although, you know, there are obviously already lots of businesses in market that are focusing on that. I think the metaverse is a really interesting one. You know, from the things that I read, it seems very hard to make a sort of decent ROI just based on the amount of users that are on there. But like Steph said, that there's absolutely opportunity for brand awareness. Like, I've read loads about what Gap have done, what Gucci have done, what Invisalign have done. Like, there are all these brands out there that are sort of focusing on the space. But yeah, for me as a user, I don't think I'm ready to be there yet. Like, I think it's like the live things that really matter to me. It's not something, you know, I don't really use anything with them sort of VR experience, and I don't really play games apart from chess, which I don't think really counts when it comes to the metaverse. So yeah, I think there's that, you know, there might be part of it which is like, you know, are consumers fully ready for that? Maybe not. But as a story of the cool things that are interesting consumers, like Steph said, like for Gap, that was an awesome thing. Everyone had heard about it. And yeah, I hope it will continue to be a platform where brands can test and trial cool things that gets them clout.
And what do you think, both of you, from the perspective of kind of what 2023 could look like for your average brand that's not got millions and millions and is able to kind of really explore and investigate how they can, you know, create a virtual world or kind of buy up land and Decentraland and kind of build virtual stores there? What are the things they should be doing? Is it at the moment trying to educate themselves? Is it dabbling and testing? Kind of what are we seeing the next 12 months look like? Because I think that it's not going to peak next year, is it? It's going to peak in a few years' time. So what can happen in the next 12, 24 months to really kind of get the ball rolling? Stefan, I'll come to you first.
I think it's just sort of keeping an ear to the ground, really, and just kind of seeing what's working, what isn't working, you know, learning from others. I think that's probably one of the best things they can do, and just kind of seeing what utility they can gain from that space. As Harry mentioned, it's still very, very early days. You know, if you look at what Meta are trying to do and their metaverse, you know, it does look like an old Sims game. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of getting everything up to scratch. But, you know, I would say that, you know, dabbling in your own NFT collection, for example, that leads to some other real world event or product, as Harriet kind of mentioned, a lot of people are still very much in the real world. And maybe this is for the next generation of people that'll grow up and they'll kind of be, it'll be like that movie Ready Player One, where everyone will just have goggles on all the time, right? But I think for now, it's really trying to make that connection between real world and the virtual world, and how kind of what synergies that kind of brings, and what new and interesting experiences you can give people that make them feel part of something, that they own something, and that ultimately helps your brand in the long run.
Absolutely. Harriet, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have much more to add on to that. I think it's all going to be around sort of keeping yourself educated, having an open mind, and, you know, the reality is, like, really understanding your audience. You know, if this is a space where your audience are spending time or they're reading a lot about, then, you know, it might make sense to get involved early. But yeah, if the budgets don't sort of allow you to dive in feet first, then there's certainly going to be a longer consideration period.
100%. This feels like a good place to end. I want to say thank you to both of you for joining me today. This has been a really, really kind of good discussion. We've covered a lot of bases today. It's been a kind of like a whistle-stop tour of the big things next year. I hope you both enjoyed the discussion. I certainly have. Thank you, Stefan. Thank you, Harriet.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to the Mad Tech Podcast special episode. Goodbye.